Holy smokes, man. Brian, we finally got set up here.
I know. It took a little bit tonight.
Yeah, you need some more caffeine in you, man.
Somebody needs to leave my stuff alone.
Hey, so tonight we got a really cool show. We got a lot of mentors that we look up to. They've kind of been our mentors. We've got the current president of Wood & Water, Mr. Mike Reese. We've got the founder of Woods & Water, the one and only Kent. And then, that's it, Kent?
Ken.
Golly. Ken. And then we've got...
Ken and Barbie.
I'm Barbie.
And then we've got the Sportsman of the Year, Mr. Al. And we're excited to have him. And the Woods and Water Group kind of follow the motto of take one, teach one. They've taken probably hundreds of people shooting, fishing, hunting over the years that... and got them exposed to the great outdoors, and they've done a lot of good work. And so we wanted to bring them on the show and kind of show people what we've learned from, huh, Brian?
Yeah, they've been pretty patient with Ron and I, letting some young kids come in and pick their brain a little bit. I think Ron probably double his age, and I could add my age to it, and I think we're barely catching up to Al there. So
why you got to do Al like that?
Well,
man,
the sad part is Al, I think, out hunts and fishes us. So Al's out there hunting and fishing every weekend, and we can barely get ourselves out once a month anymore. So I think Al's got it better off.
Sounds like you have personal problems.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's kind of work and
priorities, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, fair enough. Well, let's start off with Mike. Mike, why don't you tell us a little bit about what Woods and Waters is and why they made you president? I don't know.
Dude, you know, when you don't show up to some meetings, some things happen. I mean, our motto is all we want to do is hunt and fish and talk about it. Who doesn't want to be a member of a group like that? We got about 150 plus members right now. The majority of them are active. We get about 50 of them come to our luncheon, which is the second Thursday of every month, and we bring in guest speakers. And, you know, it might be somebody from Mendow, it might be a guide, might be a manufacturer's rep, whatever, but it's a great learning ability to come in and listen to what these guys have to say. And I've been in the club about 20 years. Ken being the founder, I came in, you know, when it was really starting to take off, and I just kept coming back and back and back.
Why wouldn't you?
Exactly.
I mean, who's your guest speaker? Our meeting is Thursday, right? Who's our guest speaker for this
month? Our guest speaker is former Lieutenant Governor Mark Hutchison. But we're not a political group. But the reason that he's our guest speaker is, if somebody remembers back about 4 or 5 years ago, there was a bill introduced to amend Nevada's constitution to make it a right to hunt, trap, and fish in the state of Nevada.
As it should be.
Right, yeah. Right now, it's only a privilege. Well, a lot of people don't know the face of the people that introduced those bills on behalf of sportsmen. Mark Hutchison was a co-sponsor. The sponsor was Scott Hammond. And so Scott and Mark worked the legislature, and our second session of introducing that bill, it passed with a 76% approval rating. And so... I want the members of Woods & Waters Luncheon to see the face of the people that are willing to step to the mic and speak on behalf of sportsmen.
Yeah, so you bring in a variety of good speakers.
Well, not to mention, you bring in, even it not being a political organization, anytime you bring somebody in that has the potential, and even as an ex-lieutenant governor, he still has some clout politically, yeah. And so his influence is going to go a long ways. So if we bring him into a club like that, into a meeting, and the members say, hey, these are some of our concerns, he's still got those feelers out there. And so,
absolutely.
And we all know what happens with politics, especially in the state of Nevada, it tends to cycle through. So he may, you know, we have our current governor is now the head of the university system for University of Nevada, Reno. So
Yes. They
all kind of travel around the system a little bit. And so you have that influence that you would need by just bringing them in and making them aware of some of the hunter issues and some of the concerns. These hunters in Woods and Waters, I mean, we've got guys that have been doing this for a really long time. That have done it anywhere and everywhere and hunted and fished just about anything you can imagine. So there are a huge wealth of knowledge, and to get somebody in there that can kind of be that voice of reason for that group is a great thing.
Absolutely. You know, and Mark will be the first one to tell you, I can't tell you when deer season opens. But I can tell you, I know you need a gun to go.
No, you don't. Or, you can have a bow.
Yeah.
Or a rock.
So
you have a Democrat in the room.
Yeah, it's not like he's a hardcore sportsman, but he understands the economic input that sportsmen give to the state. I mean, he understands all of that stuff. He is a strong Second Amendment supporter. He's not afraid to put his name and his image out there of, you know, holding a gun and stuff like that. So it's great. But more importantly, the club is nonpartisan. We don't get into it. However, it's the policies and regulations that kill us. It's not so much, even though the bills have that ability, it's educating the lawmakers, whether it be Endow, whether it be the legislature, that has the power to say, we don't think you should hunt like that. We don't think those are the ones that, you know, we try to do it. And as a group of guys that, bottom line, all we want to do is hunt and fish and talk about it. We just don't want the conversation to be, hey, I went to my favorite quail hunting spot, and lo and behold, there's two bollards up in the middle of the road and a chain going across. What happened?
Well, we've talked about that before, about the impact of the Woods and Waters group, right? So you go to a meeting, and it's not just, not necessarily just a bunch of guys that like to hunt fish sitting around talking about it, but you have Ron and I are usually there from Wynn. You've got the Desert Bighorn Fraternity guys. You got fishermen there. So you got all these clubs. So it's really kind of a, in the motorcycle world, they'll call it a coalition of clubs, right?
Yeah.
So everybody can kind of come together. We can bounce ideas off each other. So now we get somebody in the room that could have some potential influence, and you don't have a voice just from a specific sportsman's group. Like, hey, I just want to go out and deer hunt. You have influence from all these different clubs, these conservation organizations, all different species, whether it's Safari International guys that are out there and they want to go hunt exotics, or whether you have a duck guys and Ron and I that are there, you're kind of getting it from all aspects instead of just one little thing. I think the problem is these guys go into, let's say, a Trout Unlimited meeting. The only thing they're going to hear about is trout, right?
Exactly. They don't care about the quail.
So the great thing about Woods and Waters is we've got such a wide breadth of influence with what we do. So we all kind of do something a little different. Al does everything because he's a mastermind.
Absolutely.
We got guys that just love to shoot, and they're out there for the shooting groups, and we have guys that are teaching CCW classes, and that's their big focus.
Yeah.
But we really do have a broad influence over a bunch of different subjects, and the amount of bighorn guys we have in there that have the super great knowledge on the bighorn is just incredible.
It is. It is. And, you know, one of the beauties of the club itself, even though our motto is all we want to do is hunt and fish, we do an event, at least one event, every single month, except for October. We're hoping our October event is we drew a tag and we're going hunting.
Well, you know, I got a little bit of a problem with the logo or with the thing of all we want to do is fish, hunt, and talk about it. Because we should add something about and make fun of each other. Because I think that's more what we do in some of those meetings than hunt and fish and talk about it. Usually are busting on each other's, you know.
Absolutely.
I want to get back to Mike thinking he's going to draw a tag this year.
You have as good a chance as I do, Mike. Yeah. So
I'm in my fifth year of no tags. So,
I'm right there with you. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I feel your pain.
But, you know, you've got guys like Al who comes out and participates in all these different events. It doesn't matter whether it's bow hunting or a bow event. It doesn't matter if it's a black powder, pistol, fishing. Al's going to be 89 years old in June. He's our oldest member. He's our sportsman of the year. And he participates in all of this stuff.
And Al is 89. He keeps kicking everybody's butt still.
Yeah. And you know what? I will tell you.
There, so Al has something.
That's the biggest fun is kicking the kids' butts.
Yeah.
You know, I got it. I didn't know Al a whole lot before we went on the ice fishing tournament, and they were doing the poker game the night before, and I just happened to be sitting next to Al, and Al and I, we were just joking back and forth. Al didn't do very well that night. He won it the next night, but didn't do very well that night. But man, and Al was one of those guys that, and it, as well as there's a lot of guys like that. Ken's pretty good too, that you go in, and Ron and I come in there as kind of the young guys of the group, right? We're a little bit younger than most of the members. We come in there and everybody, it's just like we're part of the club, right? And it's, you don't have to go in there, and it's not, nobody's trying to protect your turf necessarily. It's everybody just there to get along. As long as you're not on my spot when I'm trying to beat you, then we'll all just get along just fine. And Al says he beats everybody, but I think I got more fish than Al this last tournament. So.
So last tournament, I was out there, and I moved to a spot and got really hot. All of a sudden, I see Brian coming by in his little boat. You know,
and I was out fishing all three people on their boat. And then he moves 20 minutes later. I go, by, how many fish you got? I go, I got five. He goes, well, I got eight. I'm like, you're cheating. And then, wait, but then he catches another fish, one other fish. He goes from 8 to 10.
You know what? It happens. You got two on a pole at once.
Now you know why two. We need to up the education in the back.
Exactly. Well, that's what Henderson schools will do for you,
hey,
right there.
After I got past my hands, I was done. So I had shoes on that.
Hey, but then we brought our buddy of ours on that one, and he ended up second in that tournament. He took, what, 16 fish? The winner was 17 fish in a day. I mean, it was a great tournament. Everybody had a good time. We had, dude, the food there at the end of that thing was just
that
awesome.
That was phenomenal. Have you ever had fried fish like that before, Al?
No, I never did.
They did Thai fried trout, fresh trout, and they Thai fried it, which Thai frying, you think it's all these exotic spices. It was salt and oil.
He said it's better if you leave it out in the sun for about an hour before you fry it.
It was probably the best trout I've ever had.
Really?
And I've ate a lot of trout. It was good enough to where we had trout in the freezer from Penguins last year. And we ended up doing trout that week again. But my kid decided he was going to leave it out in the sun for an hour or two. And it was pretty good. But, I mean, it was just excellent. That's the thing is, there was no plan that people were going to bring lunch up there, but people brought stuff and shared with everybody, and that's just
the beauty
the thing.
Of this group. It's a small, intimate group. It really is. Ken is the master at the camaraderie. He wants to make sure when somebody becomes a member, is there somebody there taking care of him? And he'll ask the question, well, who sponsored him in and stuff like that. So Ken being our founder, that's been the basis of what he's done. It's, okay, what are we doing for the new members? How are we getting the recognition? How are we getting them involved in the group and stuff? That vice fishing, the fishing like you guys did, is the best way because you get to see the true spirit and the colors.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Ken, how did you start Las Vegas Woods and Water, and why did you start Las Vegas Woods and Water Club?
Well, it's pretty easy. I sold my business back in 83 in the Lone Star State of Texas.
Where there's still freedom.
Yes, freedom. Don't have to wear a mask.
There you go.
But anyway, I took a sabbatical, did a few things I always wanted to do, and then mid-80s hit, and we didn't have a depression or a recession. We had a reconstruction, and I found out I needed to go back to work. So when you don't have a job, you become a consultant. So anyway, I found my account, a client out here in Nevada, actually was in Kansas, and he had 14 lumber yards in the western part of the United States. And he hired me to do a job, and he seemed to like my work, and the next thing I knew, I was working full time for him. And I was a hunter and fisherman in Texas, but I found myself in a foreign state, and so every once in a while, in a rare occasion, I'd see an article about hunting and fishing. I'd stick it in my lower drawer, and one rare rainy day here in Las Vegas, I dug them out, handed them to the secretary. She got a cross directory, and called 10 people, and I explained the concept that we had in Texas, a club called the Austin Woods and Waters, and where I was president of the club in 74, and I explained the concept to these 10 people and said, if you think the city would support it, I'm going to have an organization meeting in my office at 5 o'clock this afternoon. You're welcome. All 10 showed up. And that was in 1991, and we formed the Las Vegas Woods and Waters Club.
Do you still keep in contact with anybody from your Austin club?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm still a member.
See, I think it would still, I think it'd be really cool if, you know, these clubs kind of shared a little bit and they came out here and did a little bit with us and we went back there and we could get back there and did a little bit with them.
It'd be good.
It would be an awesome thing. I think that there's different knowledges you learn from different areas of where you're hunting and fishing. And so I would be lost going into Austin and trying to hunt or fish in that area because it's going to be a different environment.
Yeah.
And they'd be the same way coming here. I mean, it's a different hunt. Oh, I mean, right.
Different fishing, too.
What do you mean? There's trees here.
Explain how it's different fishing. Why is it different fishing in Austin?
Well, it's primarily bass fishing.
Okay.
You know, in Texas. we don't know, we're not cold enough to have a trout. So I came out here, I had to learn trout fish.
Yeah.
And well, go ahead.
To back up a little bit, there's only three clubs in the United States like ours. The granddaddy of them all is the Dallas Club. They've been there forever. Then we were the second in Austin, and that was 1964. I became a member in 67, and I was president in 74. And then we started this one out here in
91.
Mm-hmm. You know, 30 years ago.
What Texas was, really does it right. I mean, with their wildlife stuff, I mean, they have one of the best fishery programs in the United States. And the reason they have trophy bass is because what they do is they bring, if you catch trophy bass, they bring that bass and they offer you, say, hey, let us use it and we'll give it back to you when we're done with it. And what they do is they spawn that bass and they breed that bass. And so then that offspring goes back into their stocking program. So you're taking good genetic makeup and turning those into trophy fisheries. And, you know, it goes a long ways because the sportsmen help that. So it wouldn't happen without the sportsmen. Here in Nevada, if you tell somebody, hey, we're going to take your fish from you and we'll give it back to you when we're done, they're like, no, you're not. You know, there's no way. You're not touching my fish.
Tell Al that.
Yeah.
We were battle-born.
Yeah, but you know.
We don't give anything away with a fight.
It does, and what's happening, what you're seeing in a lot of the smaller ponds and stuff is guys will let you fish their pond, and the rule is if it's small, you got to throw it. You got to take it. You can't put it back in that water because they don't want to overcrowd the water. So they do it right. We could learn a lot of stuff in the state of Nevada from some of the things that they do. And I'm sure there are some areas that they could learn from us as well. But, you know, I think it's great that we're bringing that idea and we brought it into Nevada. And this is a pretty successful program. It's the longest running.
So,
hey, what? I had a question for Al. How many members were in those clubs?
You mean Ken?
Ken. How many members were in those clubs back in Austin and Dallas?
Well, you're testing my memory, but we were, when I was there, it was about the same size we are now.
Okay.
And then they went up, and then with the COVID and things, they went down like we did.
Okay.
But we only lost about 30 members.
If that, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We're building back.
Yeah, well, I mean, the club, it's Dallas, the best kept secret in Vegas, I think.
Yeah, Dallas, they probably have 300 members.
300 members. Okay.
Ken just showed me, before we went on the air, he just showed me an email that he got from the guys back in Texas. And they're like, man, we're charging $75 a year and we're going broke. How are you guys only charging $25 and you guys are sustainable and you guys are growing? And it's like, hey, it's efficiency.
It is. And when we go to do stuff, it's, you know, the members are paying their own way to do things. And, you know, we do some events that, you know, are a little bit more expensive, but we have some pretty good sponsors with Ivan, with New Frontier Armory, providing stuff for us. And I think that goes a long ways. I think, you know, the fact that when we do our meetings and our luncheons that we all chip in $20 to have lunch, mm-hmm. That helps. And certainly, you know, this has been a very generous club. I mean, the Woods and Waters Club, not only do we come together as a camaraderie and as a social club thing, but man, you guys run a Boy Scout troop, and you sponsor that. You guys have sponsored our clubs from time to time. And, you know, you're also giving back to that hunting and fishing community. And that's a good thing. I mean, we just talked about that the other day. Ron and I started the Win You Sportsman's program. That was the first thing Mike did as soon as we posted on the page, as Mike said, yeah, now you got to hit us up for some money.
Well, it's a youth. And so our give back is basically tailored just toward the youth. You know, so we have the Silver State Claybreakers. We have the Wranglers 4-H. We have archery in the classroom. We got Johnson Middle School. I mean, we've got all these youth organizations like the Boy Scouts and stuff that we're trying to cultivate 89 years old, Ken's up there. When these guys are dead and gone, we need to know that somebody's coming back in to fill those shoes. You guys are the younger generation, but you guys are bringing the youth in with you. So if we hadn't attracted you guys, chances are we wouldn't have attracted the youth.
Yeah, and that was the original idea between the Win You Sportsman's program was we were just going to provide stuff to other clubs, right? And so there was an issue with funding and not being able to get grant funding because the university system didn't want to deal with the NRA. So Ron and I, we can do it outside of that group and just give them what they need. But the idea was it would bring people into the wind club to do service projects. So the duck boxes and stuff like we just did. So it would bring guys in to do that. With you guys, it's kind of the same thing. We can bring in these youth programs, bring members in through those youth programs. The great thing about like Ron and I being members of Woods and Waters is we've got kind of a living set of mentors there, right?
Yeah.
So there's these guys have so much knowledge on stuff that they're a really valuable resource to bring kids in and to make kids successful outdoorsmen and hunters and fishers.
Yes.
So when we talk about that stuff, it all kind of blends together. We talk about that big group mentality, and that's what we got to have. And we take care of everybody. So we take care of all the other clubs. We take care of each other. We take care of the kids. And that's the only way we're going to grow our sport. And it really is. We don't probably have as many female members as any of the clubs would like, but it's growing. Seeing more and more of them.
Yeah. It is. And you know, and one of the other things that we do for the youth is August is a bring your kid to lunch month. So they're out of school and school is about to start a week later or so, but the club buys those kids lunch and then we make sure that each one of those kids go home with something, whether it's a gift card for Sportsman's Warehouse or whether it's a fishing pole or something. We want to make sure that's our way of giving back and planting the seed for the next generation.
You know, you'll even pull money out of your wallet. We had one kid show up so many times, you even pulled out $100 and started giving each kid $10 and we ran out of raffle prizes.
You know, and you got to watch it because you tell Ron you're going to feed his kids. We will be broke within a year.
Hey, listen, there's one way to get sportsmen to the... Anyways, hey, so back to the point of, you know, Woods and Waters putting on events and having mentors. That's what I love about Woods and Waters is you guys will go to Cummins, you'll go to Kirsch, you'll go to Panguage, you'll go to Otter Creek. And a lot of the complaints about new hunters is, oh, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do that. But if there's a big group and you're part of that group and you're going up there, you always have someone to be around to pick their brain. And so for a lot of new hunters or fishermen, and if you don't know a certain location, it's really cool because Woods and Waters is always going somewhere new.
Yeah.
Well, Mike, tell them about the trip up to the Rubies you guys did. That was a really cool trip.
We've done this for the last couple of years, probably 4 or 5 years. We'll take 8 or 10 guys, and we do a pack trip that's a ride in on horseback for a couple of days. We go up to Hidden Lake, 10,000 feet, 9,500 feet, and we do a fishing trip in a mountain lake. Every year we've gone, somebody from the group has set a new state record in that lake.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
No way.
We had past president Steve Linder, caught like a 17 inch. We had Cody Moore the following year go in and catch that. And you know, you talk about bringing some guys in. It reminded me of one of our past presidents who since passed away, Mr. Dave Famighetti. Dave is this guy out of the Air Force, a hard charger. He stood up in front of our group and goes, guys, don't laugh at me, but I don't know how to tie a fish hook on the line. I want somebody to teach me. He goes, otherwise all you're going to get is 4 square knots because that's all I know how to do.
That's all you need.
And he said, I want somebody to come in and really teach me how to do it. Well, he's one of the ones who won Angler of the Year, all around, and he tied for Marksman of the Year in the same year.
He also took a bow, never shot it before.
Yeah,
and won the event.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, that's a great part about having so many guys out doing the fishing and hunting and shooting, and especially like the fishing. We all have a different style. Right. Even Ron and I will go on the same boat. So
one big gob of Velveeta.
Yeah.
Just throw it out.
Well, I was throwing a spoon. Ron was fishing. He was bait fishing, I think. He was using power bait or something.
I'm always cheese logging. I'm fishing or trout. I have got cheese on that line.
And so we saw a switch throughout the day. So I had 5 and he had none. And it just switched and the switch went off for my spoon and the switch came on for his bait. And Al was fishing something different. Brian Patterson was fly fishing, and I'll fly fish, but that's all Brian Patterson will pretty much do. He just fly fishes. You know?
He thinks it's a disgrace to catch anything other than on a fly.
He has to use bait when he ice fishes.
But that's why he does the most fish wins, because then you don't have to worry about a limit because he doesn't keep them anyways. So
it's all catch release. But yeah, it, you know, not to pass up, but you know, he made a comment about Dave doing the bow. When I came into Woods and Waters, number one, I had never shot a bow, not one that you didn't let me end of the arrow and have it stick on the mirror. You know, that's about the extent of my bowl.
That's what I was deer hunting with this year.
Yeah. But I had never done a black powder in my life, ever. And so with that, we go to the event, even though I don't have a black powder, somebody else had one there, and they let you borrow it. We supply the ammo, the stuff like that. But that, I mean, you talk about a well-rounded group of sportsmen. If they're involved in it, they're going to learn how to shoot pistols, the pistol silhouettes. You're going to shoot black powder. You're going to shoot the three-gun shoot, a 9mm pistol. You're going to shoot the 223 semi-auto. You're going to shoot a fully auto machine gun.
How crazy is that?
Which is unbelievable in itself. Ken's probably sitting here going, we never did that in Dallas.
Ken, you didn't. But, no, yeah, that reminds me of Dallas, a semi-auto full automatic gun. That sounds like Texas.
But this is Vegas, and we're the town of entertainment. So if it wasn't for this town with that and having Mr. Famagetti help really get it off and going, mm-hmm. with doing the fully automatic machine gun, I mean, boy, that's... Are we ever going to hunt with one? No. But to introduce somebody to that and let
it ammo prices nowadays.
Yeah.
I'll go duck hunt with one.
Yeah.
Al's got something here.
Coming up in a week and a half, we have our spring feast, which... And Mike runs a sporting clays competition while we're out there. And that is really great. The best feast there is right there.
Some crawfish, some mud bugs.
Yeah, mud bugs.
Oh, man, those
are
delicious.
We actually fly those in straight from Louisiana on Southwest. Kyle Otto.
They have to wear a mask?
Nope. Kyle Otto will go down to Southwest.
Now from Louisiana.
Take him on up to the Clark County Shooting Park, and he'll do all the fixings with it. So that's another event that we do that's free to the members as far as the food and stuff. Crawdads, shrimp, potatoes, corn on the cob, and then we do the sporting clays event. It's $50, but for that $50, you get to shoot 100 sporting clay targets. You get a golf cart. It's a 4-man team, but it's an individual score, and there's always about $10 a man left over to go into a Lewis class. And if you shoot good enough, you might have been able to pay for your shooting.
You got to explain what a Lewis class is.
Lewis class is a way that they came up with a couple decades ago to make it fair. Not just the winner of the event wins all the money. They'll take it and they'll divide it into what we call classes. Let's just say there's 30 competitors. They'll do three classes. So the top shooter gets X amount of money. The 11th top score. Now you don't know what that score is going to be until after all the results are in. And then the 21st top score. All three of those people will win the same amount of money as the first place guy in the top.
It makes it way more fun.
Then you got second place. Then you got third place.
You have opportunity to win, even if you're not a great shooter sometimes.
Handicap.
Yeah. You know what? I'm calling BS on your pricing, though. You said $50, but I'm saying at least $400, because who has 100 rounds of ammunition laying around right now? And who's going to be able to go buy 100 rounds of ammunition right now?
I know.
Hey, we got some people that jumped on here. Mr. Bill Daniels got on and said, Mike Reese is my rent mentor. Do you know him?
Yes.
How much did you pay him to tie a piss?
Dude, I met him when he first moved here from Vegas. He used to own his own gun club back east.
Okay.
And he is the Western States rep for White Flyer. The targets.
Oh, I remember him at a luncheon.
Yes. So he's a Woods and Waters member. And it's for a while, him and I had a competition going back and forth. You know, we would one bird each other. And now, I mean, he's just gotten in and he's skyrocketed up there in the trap shooting world, in the sporting clay. Phenomenal shooter. But he's an awesome ambassador. To Woods and Waters and to the sport.
Yeah. We got one other in here. Susan McCormick Phillips said, you might get more women out if you offer lessons. My husband's mean, doesn't have patience with me.
But you know what? Here's the thing is you say that and it's kind of a joke, but I will tell you, if you came out to one of those events, there's 50 guys that'd work with you and help you out.
Yeah. Way back when.
And there's different levels, there's different teaching skills. Every guy has a different way to teach. So, go ahead. Sorry, Mike. Yeah.
So, no. But that's the reason that we contribute to the Nevada Firearms Coalition, because those guys are doing the Annie Oakley League.
I was going to just
women,
say
it's women yeah. only.
I was just going to say the yeah. Annie Oakley program is an amazing program. It's at the it's still at the Clark at the County Clark County Shooting Complex.
Does Maggie still run that?
I'm not sure, but they basically they start you off and you have to go through their intro class. Yes. Everybody that does it has to go through their intro class. They give you a 22 pistol, I believe, to start off with, and they teach you the fundamentals of pistol, and then they get you into rifle, I believe, as well. And then once you've gone through that basic class, it's just instruction after that, and they have yep. time for you just to kind of hone your skills. So it's an excellent, excellent program for female shooters.
And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's free
it
to
is.
All the women.
It is, I believe. If it's not, it's a very minimal fee, if anything. Yeah. But I believe it's free, and I want to say it used to be every Tuesday night, but I'm not positive. But you can call up to the Clark County yeah. gun range, and they'll be able to point you to the Annie Oakley program, or get online and type in Las Vegas Annie Oakley program, and it'll bring it right yeah. up, and it'll give you the information
it's
about
sponsored it. Sponsored by Nevada Firearms Coalition. So that's another thing that we have in the state. I mean, everybody hears about the NRA and stuff, but the Nevada Firearms Coalition has filled a huge void that we have. They'll fight legislatively. They'll help train. They do a conservation arm as well. And that's a great group.
And I haven't done as many as I like to. I've done one shoot with those guys just because I saw they were doing a Know Your Limit shoot. And I went took my boys to do that shoot.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a great group of guys. And they're another group of guys that's kind of hands-on. I shot vintage military for a while, and it's kind of the same thing. You know, a lot of these groups, if you get in there and you don't have a knowledge, there's guys that are willing to help you out and give you the knowledge.
Absolutely.
And get you straight. And I think that's the big part of it. We have to, if we're going to grow our sports, whether it's shooting, whether it's fishing, whether it's hunting, whatever it is, we've got to get new people into these sports. Everybody's trying to take as much as they can away from these sports. We've been yeah. pretty adamant about, you know, the predator issues, right?
Yes.
And so we've done a couple podcasts about that. And that's one issue. The other issue is, as soon as we go to the next generation, there's not enough hunters coming in. We cut that tax revenue. Now, what that tax revenue does is now we have no money to run our wildlife programs. We have no money to run our management programs. So it's important that we get as much of that tax base in as we can. And so these women shooters, these female shooters, whether you got young daughters, whether your wife's out yeah. there, I get it. I don't think I could teach my wife to shoot either, because the last thing she's going to do is listen to me. I'm a certified firearms instructor. She ain't going to listen to me. But, yeah. but
she
you know,
knows you're full of crap.
If we yeah. can, pretty much. But if we can.
Well, she'll teach you how to run the vacuum, though, so you got to pay attention.
She doesn't run the vacuum. What are you talking about? That's what we have kids for. But no, if we can, as other groups, if we can take these and, you know, it's hard. It is hard to teach your own family to shoot. It's mm-hmm. hard to teach your own family. You get emotionally
you
involved.
You got to pass a generation. It's got to be the grandpa to teach
yeah,
the grandkids.
That, exactly. Yeah. The grandpa has more patience.
Look at Ken. I mean, Ken's had his grandkids in. The last shoot that we did on the pellet gun, Ken, his son, and his grandkid.
Yeah, they ran out of money for Ken.
Yeah.
We were 1, 2, 3. I was 3.
Yeah.
Well, you taught him right, apparently.
He's proud of that fact, though. But it's, and you know, one of the interesting statistics that keeps coming up in conversations with everybody is we got to bring our youth in. Nevada is doing it right. If you look at the 2019 and 2020, just the big game, not duck hunting, not trapping, not quail hunting, just the big game, the age group from 11 to 20, the amount of kids that put in for the tag is greater than the age group of 66 up to 80. So when you look at that, we're not.
Al, did you see that? He left you out of that group.
I know.
Yeah, what were Al's numbers
but
like?
But Al's coming over to my house because he's got his son coming in, and they want to put in this year for archery in the state. His son lives up by Smith Valley, but it is. It's not growing at the rate of our generation. Our generation, everybody hunted. You were frowned upon if you didn't hunt. Well, there's so many things, but we didn't have the opportunity. We didn't have computers. We didn't have cell phones.
Exactly.
We didn't, I mean, we had Little League, we had Pop Warner, and that was pretty much it, and you had hunting.
Do you remember that I sent you a TikTok a while back? Do you remember that one? Like, it says, give the best piece of hunting advice you got. And it says, your grandpa used to shoot him in a red shirt and blue jeans.
Yes. Yes.
So well, the best thing is to shut up and sit still.
And so it's kind of an important thing. So we look at even the kids coming into the hunting sport. So back in your day and even somewhat in my day, it kind of sort of changed a little bit when I was in high school is, you know, guns were not thought of as a bad thing back in your generation. My generation, it started to go towards more of that. You know, I was graduated in 93. So it kind of went more towards that. But what we see is a lot of these youth programs that are around, like 4-H and stuff like that, those programs are geared towards kids that either already shoot or already hunt, right? So they're into the program. The trap leagues. Trap leagues, those kids shoot all the time.
Yeah.
So when Ron and I decided to do this Win Youth Sportsman's program, and when we got the funding to do this, it's geared towards those underprivileged and those kids that would not otherwise have the opportunity to go hunt and fish. So I think it's important that not only that we promote the youth and the female hunters, but those demographics that would never be able to afford it. So you have a minority community that knows nothing about hunting. That doesn't mean that they're not going to be great hunters,
right?
But they've never been exposed to it. So how do we get these kids exposed to it? How do we get them around people like you guys that have that underlying experience that can explain things in a way their parents aren't going to be able to explain it to them, because they've come up in a world where hunting and shooting is bad, a lot of them. And the only influence they have with firearms is being a tough gangster kid, right? And so we have to change that narrative and get them in the right direction and get them into an appropriate way to move forward. And a lot of these kids, they're in a bad situation. So we bring mentors in to mentor these kids up.
Yeah, it's interesting that you brought that up, because the NSSF, which is the National Shooting Sports Foundation, has done surveys about when you were coming out of high school. From that point forward, we have more single family parenting. Okay, in my generation, I'm the guy that had the shotgun hanging in the gun rack in the back of the truck, and I hunted ducks before school.
I had to hide mine behind my seat in the car.
Yeah. So what the NSSF did is, and they're the ones who put on the SHOT Show and stuff, they said, okay, we got to get with the manufacturers of the guns and the ammo. We got to get kids involved. So what the NSSF did is they started what's called the SCTP program. Scholastic, named after the school because it's an educational clay target program. And that's why you see the trap leagues today, because of that, because for the first 5 years, they did that. That was all across the country. Then they converted it because you had the ATA, which is the Amateur Trap Shooting Association, had been around for a century. They handed it off to them. They started it. They handed it off to them. And now it's called the AIM program.
Yep.
So they did that. But here in Las Vegas, we have a Nevada Youth Shooting Scholastic Program. Lend a hand helps put that on. But there's 6 or 8 clubs in the state that signed on with it. Just like Ken said, when Woods and Water started, Ken said, I sent 10 emails out. I got 10 responses. Lend a Hand did the same thing with Yerington, Reno, Washoe, Elko, and went to these groups and says, do you need a program for your youth? They said, yes, we do. Okay, well, let me set it up. Let me go get the insurance. Let me go do the criteria. Let's do the background checks and let's go do that. Woods and Waters donates $500 every year to that program because they've got certified coaches. They're NRA instructors and they're certified background checks. And so that, I believe, is what started a lot of people of the youth that were talking about hunting. But in order to go hunting, you got to learn to shoot first.
Absolutely.
And that's how they introduced them to, now, if you think you can hit a dove going 40 miles an hour, it's like, well, I don't know. Well, let's go try some skeet. Let's go try some sporting clays. And so that was their brainchild of how to introduce to the youth, get them away from the computers, mm-hmm. get them away from the social media, and get them away. I mean, you have BMX bikes, you have skateboarding, a lot of the stuff that we didn't have. And it's been highly successful. And our demographics for Nevada, I can't speak for the whole United States, show that Nevada is holding our own and in some areas is growing in the youth category.
Where you have a little bit of a gap is, so my kid, obviously he's multi-time state qualifier 4-H shooting, and he wanted to do the program through his high school. So there's a few high school leagues, and there's Nevada High School League. The Clark County School District was adamant about they are not allowed to do any of that. And so anything short of
But they changed their position.
Anything short of filing a court case, it's not going to happen with the Clark County School District.
Brian actually tried in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
It did, because we had in the Scholastic Clay Target program, we had some kids who actually earned a letter from Shadow Ridge High School and Arborview in Clay Target.
But it can't be officially sponsored through the school district.
You're right.
The problem. Right. But per Nevada revised statutes, Nevada law, that they have to provide a chaperone or a mentor, mm-hmm. or whatever they call it,
yes.
for any program those kids want to do. Yes. So if you really wanted to push the issue, and for me, it's just, where do you put your cards, right? So my kids are already shooting.
Where do you fight your battles?
They're already shooting competitively. You know, do we really want to push that? And then the other issue you have is you go out on a limb and you push it. A lot of times what we find, and you know, that the political fight is you're standing there alone. You know, you got a lot of people that'll run their mouth until it's time to show up, and then you're standing alone. So,
hey, Mike, didn't they used to let you out of school for hunting days
in Utah?
They still do in Utah.
Not let you out. They shut it down.
They shut down school.
The whole school is shut down.
Yeah. How do we get back there?
Well, Logandale, pretty much shuts down for the fair. They say, tell us what days you're going to be here, fair week, and and that's it. But really, realistically, the school shut down for that. But it's where their value is. So Utah is a huge hunting state, and the families hunt. Logandale and Overton are where Ron and I live. I mean, almost everybody out there hunts. I mean, it's getting a little bit more watered down with more people moving in, but you know when it's hunting season.
Stay out of there, you Vegas people.
I was looking up the stats today. You go to Lincoln County, you go to White Pine County. I mean, just at the amount of people in Lincoln County that applied for big game tags last year was just under 1,000 people. In a county that's got 10,000. So 10% of the people, they may hunt, they may waterfowl, they may upland game, but this was just on big game. So, in 2020, there was 225,000 hunting and fishing licenses sold in the state of Nevada. 225,000.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to get back to Ken. Ken, what was your favorite event with Woods and Water? Like Dallas or Vegas, you got any good stories from events you've been on? I'm sure you got a few.
I have a million.
Well, that's what I wanted to hear tonight. I want to hear the stories.
But back to youth.
Okay.
The Austin Club, of course, it's different there. 90% more plus are private landowners. So we'd get ranchers to give us their doe permits, and we had a program called Operation Orphans. And we'd sponsor the kids to come out, give them firearm safety, and harvest the doe. And we can't do that here. But we have our hunting and fishing is the key. The leadership, we've been very fortunate. Mike here and others, he's our four-time, we normally rotate presidents every year. And we have a second vice president, first vice president, and it rotates, and we elect 5 new board members each year. And 15. So we try to keep new blood, new fresh ideas that coming into the club. Now, Mike, he stepped up. He's been such a good president, we won't let him go.
I miss that meeting.
Well, don't worry, we threw you under the bus pretty quick, too.
But to answer your question is, every one of our events is an event worth me talking about.
Yeah.
We in Austin never did have near the events that we have. We have 15 or...
We do about 15 events a year that are actually what we call sanctioned. They either qualify for Marksman of the Year or they qualify for Angler of the Year. But we do events like the pack trip that I just talked about. Yeah. Ken's son and Ken helped put on a Yuma dove hunt. Well, that's an event, but it doesn't fall under our monthly event. But we do that once a year. And then, sometimes we'll go do a spring a goose hunt back in Kansas. So, Al, I think you've been on that before, yes. Haven't you? Yeah. So even though those are Woods and Waters event, those aren't what we call a honcho event where you get anything for going towards your Marksman of the Year or Angler of the Year or the all-around. So we've got about 12 of those events, but then we add on our our goose hunts, our dove hunts, you know, and all that other stuff. So we're up around 15 events.
They just had a bunch of guys
stay busy.
They had a bunch of guys go pheasant hunting recently down there.
Two groups.
Yeah,
Al and I went up.
Hey, see?
Brian's got a... I guess there's a thing at Woods and Water that when you go out fishing, like someone always loses a stringer of fish. I've heard that's happened multiple times. Do you want to tell them your story about your stringer of fish? Oh, have you already told Al about this?
That was the first ever Woods and Water event that I went to, right?
Went to, yes.
So I don't tournament fish. I just, it's never something I've been into. I go out and I have a good time to fish, right? And so we're out there and Ron and I start the morning out and we are slaughtering it. We got our buddy Jared with us. Jared impressed me. The first time I've ever seen anybody catch a shrimp on a fish hook. And so we're making fun of Jared and we're just killing it. Well, I caught about a 26 inch trout.
Right.
26 inch rainbow. Beautiful trout. And so I'm like,
of course, it could have been 30 inches if it got away. It
could have been 60 inches, you know. But
yeah, it's a couple of store inches every time he tells a story.
I'm looking at that fish, and I'm thinking, well, you know, this could possibly win this tournament. That's the biggest fish I've ever caught, you know. And so this could win this tournament. I'm like, I'm pretty stoked. We're fishing, and we kind of moved a little bit, and Ron's fishing, and he caught another fish. And
it was getting windy. If you,
it was getting windy.
You guys were out of that trip. I mean, it was we were. Yeah.
It was time for us to come in.
Couldn't keep now. Where were we?
We were at Panguitch.
Yes.
So we're coming in, and Ron catches another fish. It's the smallest fish we had for the day.
No, so it started getting really choppy. It started rocking that boat.
Yeah.
We're in a little John boat, so that thing's just really whipping. So we're like, oh, we're gonna go back to the dam because it gives you a little cover, you know. But it didn't. And I pulled in a fish and I was putting it on the thing.
It was the smallest fish we caught all day, the Ron and I. And so he's going to put it on.
I had to put that in there.
Yeah. Well, no, because it adds to the story later on. But so Ron goes to put the fish on the stringer and he decided, you know what? Screw it. I might have put it on the stringer. I was just throwing the bottom of the boat.
Tipping. The boat started
to go crazy, right? So then Ron's like, we got to get back to shore. So he guns it back to shore. About 5 minutes later, he goes, where'd that stringer fish go? The whole stringer, and we'd limited. Ron and I had limits. Both of us limited out. And so this stringer fish is gone. The only fish we had was the smallest fish in the boat. And Ron's like, you know, hey, you can turn it in for points. And I'm like, no, you can have it, Ron. It's your fish. You can have that fish, right? That smallest fish that we had won third place.
Wow.
And so we lost our fish. So then Jared, the funny part is Jared had never been to anything Woods and Waters. Never been to a single Woods and Waters event.
And he's probably a guy that would never have gone.
No, he probably would have never gone. And Ron, all right, do you need to get a house? Come with us. So we paid $20 for him to go with us, had a steak dinner. So we're eating steak dinner. Well, steak dinner, there's always a giveaway. So they're throwing out gift cards. Well, Jared wins a gift card. And so they throw it to him. He catches his gift card. And I just look at him and go, Jared, congratulations. That's the first thing you caught all day. And everybody in the building just started dying. But that's kind of the camaraderie you get. Yeah. And so then that's the story that kind of floats around and bounces back and forth. But we had a blast. And that one's a steak dinner event every year. And it's excellent. You get to sit around with guys you would normally not talk to. I know in my industry, there's a company owner in my industry, that I've heard his name all my life, ever since I've been in that industry. And you sit there in there, and he's just one of the other guys with it. So you do get to see guys and meet guys, and you get them on a more personal level. I think there's something about getting outdoors and shooting and fishing and hunting. And
sitting around a fire.
Yeah, or just sitting around a group and just cutting up that you build a little bit of a bond, and you can't help it.
So, Alice, Sportsman's of the Year, do you have any stories like that, being with Woods and Water for a while, that – are just comical that you could think of? I know I'm putting you on the spot. We could come back.
No, it's just that all the events that I go to, I enjoy them very much and keep me going. The hunting and fishing, I work out at least two or three times a week just so I can hunt and fish because I go goose hunting and I got lay down blinds. I got to get up and back down and get on those and go deer hunting with my son in the mountains. I got to walk up the mountains. He says, what's the matter, Dad? And I said, wait till you're 80 and see how fat you get. So, but they're always on my case no matter what. But that's why I work out. If I didn't have a hunting and fishing, I'd probably be a couch potato. I don't know.
Couch. Well, you know, there are some pretty good stories that come from these events. I think Jalindo Tiberti, I think, had lost a fishing pole at the beginning of an ice fishing tournament.
Ice fishing,
a couple hours later, he caught his fishing pole with somebody else's fishing pole. And it had, I think it had his, somebody else caught his fish that he'd hooked up but took his pole. And so then the discussion was, well, who gets credit for the fish?
Yeah. We have some interesting times at Woods of Waters. It is fun.
And it's a good time, and everybody's going to bust on each other and just, yeah. And it's all good natured fun, you know, and, you know, you may go out and have a rough day, but man, you better not tell anybody you had a rough day, because it's just going to be worse on you. I mean, I gave Al a hard time over this last fishing day. I'm like, so everybody, it's on the honor system, which is how Ron ended up with 14 fish, by the way. But it's the on your honor system thing. You come in and tell them how many fish you have. So Brian's got a sheet, and it shows Al 1.5. I'm like, how the hell do you have half a fish?
He got one up to the boat. He counted half.
Well, then I had at least six more.
You know, I was on that pontoon boat.
Yeah.
And I got it to the boat, and I had the net back here, and I turned the net, and I raised the fish up out of the water over here. So when I got the net, I didn't have the fish.
You know, at least you had a net, because I forgot mine at home. And I go to swing it back into the boat, and now I'm like, as soon as you get that fish out of the water, man, it's early season. They get a little feisty, and they pop right off that hook. And yeah. I probably lost six or seven that way, right at the boat, just pulling them into the boat. Yeah. You know,
you guys used to put on, was it you that used to put on the coyote contest up at Cherry Creek?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it was Woods of Waters. So Dwayne LeDuc would go do it. And that started about 7 years ago. Actually, I take that back. It started with Joe Luby.
Okay.
Joe Luby is now the proprietor of Two Bits Bourbon.
Oh, is that who that is?
That is him.
He donates to everything.
Yeah, he does.
If you guys could go
but
get
the
something.
The story of how he came up with the name of that was on a Woods of Waters event. His girlfriend was leaving town, and he wanted to go fishing at Sunnyside. He says, okay, I'll take the dogs. So he took the dogs, and while he's fishing, the dogs ran away. One dog ran away. He stayed up there for 2 days. He could not find it. He put out, and he did everything. He had no idea what happened to it.
Coyote got him.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man.
And so fast forward, his wife calls him up and says, you know the dog of mine you lost? He goes, yeah. I found one I want.
Oh, that's expensive. Goes, that sounds expensive.
Okay. And she goes, but sounds this expensive. Time, it's not one, it's two. So he named his bourbon company Two Bitch Bourbon.
Well, now that since we've got a couple of board members, I'd like to propose that we come up with a new coyote calling contest, and we name it after a specific person that might be from Clark County that really loves coyotes.
No, I don't.
Let me finish the story. So Joe Luby started the coyote calling contest. Okay. Mm-hmm. But he's a big time hunter. Well, he comes back and we say, okay, give us a report. And he goes, We didn't get any coyotes. We didn't call any in. You're like, okay. So this went on for 5 years.
I heard you just pile those up in your tailgate, like this high.
50 at a time in the back of your truck.
Yeah. So for Woods and Waters, I'll go on record. First 5 years, we never shot a coyote. None. Dwayne Little goes, I got a ton of them out at my ranch. We'll hold it out there. Man, they're running everywhere out there. Okay. So we did that for 2 or 3 years. Record's still the same. Zero coyotes harvested.
It sounds like it's a coyote drinking contest.
Yeah, exactly.
You try to outdrink the coyotes
Woods
every year.
Woods and Waters has never yet harvested a single coyote in 8 years. Not a one. But we've held 8 contests.
So almost like that Otter Creek trip you guys had that everybody tied for first place.
Yeah. Yeah. So, And hopefully we are able to put on a coyote contest this next year.
Yeah, maybe we should see if Larry Staley will be the honcho on that one.
No, Larry Staley actually wants to get coyotes. So
yeah. I'm just saying we can break the streak. If we bring him into the group, we can say our first successful coyote calling contest.
So the rumor has it, I won't say the name, but But a guy took it a shot saying he was shooting at a coyote so he could be the first one to say, I saw a coyote. But nobody else saw it.
It was the other guy's dog.
Yeah.
Well, maybe if it was in the stomach still. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyways. Well, Al, so how did you get Sportsman of the Year? What's all in that?
Just living a long time.
He's got more points.
No. I mean, Al was a good recipient of it. I mean, he's a prime example that when Ken and them started the club, our main banquet is called the Sportsman of the Year Banquet. That's the reason for holding our banquet. This year, because we couldn't have a banquet, we actually did it at a luncheon. So Al's the first at ever receiving his award at a luncheon. Okay, it's always been at a banquet. But it's community-minded. You put the club first. What do? Al was our game warden, which what that entails is every one of our lunches, he would go out and buy $300 worth of door prizes. He'd go pick them all out and bring them in and do that. But Ken's been very active in all of the events. He's done every one of our event at least once. He's been very active in that. He's helped with the banquet before. He ran the front door. So it's the involvement in the club, but it's also outside of the club. What have you done in the community? Well, he's 89 years old, and look at the shape he's in. I mean, I don't care whether you're a fraternity member or whatever. He could actually go hunt sheep today if he had to. So in that, I mean, he's our oldest member in the club now, but he's done. Everybody at the club loves him.
Well, and I'll tell you from a personal standpoint, I think he's a great ambassador for the club.
Absolutely.
I really enjoy being around Al. I mean, that poker tournament, I mean, we had a good time. Al showed me his hand. He's like, what the hell am I supposed to do with this?
So to Al's credit, this was the first time that we had a tie. We had to go to a tiebreaker. So as our chairman here, we said, what are we going to do? I said, well, you're the tiebreaker vote. And
so how much did Al have to pay you then, Ken, to get that award? Well, just so I know for next
Al
year.
Al was one of these guys that says, I don't care about awards. I don't care about certificates. But he was the most proud guy ever seen.
Yeah, he was standing pretty tall that day, that's for sure.
He couldn't wait to get home to hang it on the wall.
Yeah. You got that right.
Very well-deserved award.
I couldn't. With the people that were nominated, I said, why am I up here? And then when he called out my name, I said, you could have pushed me over.
Well, I think, like I said, I think you're probably one of my favorite people in that group, Al. You really are. You're a great ambassador for the program. I mean, Ken's great. Mike's great. There's a lot of great guys, but. And I was telling Ron, I'm like, Dan, I hung out with Al a little bit. I'm like, I really like Al, you know.
Well, that's why he's Sportsman of the Year.
Yeah. There you go.
Because Brian likes him. That's why.
But that's the thing is you get these guys, and we all have different personalities, right? So we're all going to gravitate towards a different type of guy. And we got some guys that are a little bit more aggressive than other guys, and we got some guys that are pretty laid back. And, you know, everybody will find kind of their place to be, and it's the great thing about it.
Hey, let me give you an update from Facebook here. Elkie Nelson got on here and said that she's showing up to take over the group with women.
And Elkie's an awesome photographer.
That's like a challenge.
Well, she's an awesome photographer,
too. If she is there, she's going to make all you guys look good while you're fishing. Her video... I'll show you after the show, but she takes pictures of our dogs in the Retriever Club.
Really?
And they are just... I wish I could remember the name of her photography thing. I'll put it in the comments, but she is just phenomenal. And then Rush Johnson says, Al is a car shark. Don't let him fool you.
He won the second night. So I think he was just kind of luring people in to give him a false sense of security. So more of them sign up the next night. The way they do their card games is everybody puts $20 or whatever it is in the pot and they just divvy the chips. So they just split them.
Absolutely.
Everybody gets the same amount of chips. So. There's no necessary monetary value. It's one chip or two chips or three chips. He lost the first night. You made it halfway through, I think, Al, first night.
By far, yeah.
And then the second night, he just wiped the floor up with everybody. So,
well, if you take hunting, fishing, dead serious, this club's not for you.
Oh, I take it pretty serious, and it's still a club for me.
If you want to have fun, how can you not have fun watching an 89-year-old guy put everybody else to shame?
Well, and you know what? I will tell you, there's.
Well, he was out on the ice fishing too. Yeah. He wandered out on the ice.
But there's a certain amount of to that. If you're, I mean, if all you want to do is go and win a competition, that's the only thing you're there for. Anyway, I will tell you though, Jared, Ron, and I are about the three most competitive people you will ever meet in your entire life. And we love the club, yeah. Even if we don't win. I mean, but Jared, it was funny because Jared comes in with 16 fish and there was somebody with 17. And I'm like, I don't care as long as Jared doesn't win.
So Jared's out there and we got Robert Gaudette in the middle of the boat. Jared has his lines out and Robert Gaudette keeps throwing his lines over Jared's lines. And Jared looks at it and goes, what are you doing, playing defense?
And it's funny because Gaudette's Gaudette. Yeah. You know, he's his own character.
He doesn't even care about winning. He was this. Yeah.
And Jared, you know, he's LDS and so he's pretty mellow. And Gaudette just was letting it loose. And Jared's just sitting there laughing. I mean, what are you going to do? Just laugh.
He has a very colorful vocabulary, and we all enjoyed it.
Yes.
And it made the fishing trip that much better because
and you know what?
He'd throw another fish in, and you're like, what's he going to call this one? So,
you know, you're going to meet some of your lifelong friends.
Yeah.
And for me, I moved into retirement community. Okay? I finally came of age, and as a kid, I built the clubhouse, never dreaming that I'd live in this community. Guess who my neighbor is? It's Al.
I'm sorry, Al.
I didn't know where Al lived, and I was more excited that we moved in, and Al's our neighbor.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, you get into this program, and it's just, it is. It's such a different group program. This podcast here wouldn't exist without the Wood and Water program.
No, it would not.
Because the reason we started this was to kind of try to get the bug shook out to do something for Mike. And then it kind of picked up and then Mike started his own. And so now we've got our podcast. Mike's running, I think, one or two podcasts now.
But I need you guys to come teach me how to convert them into a pod.
We create an animal because Mike might be up to 9 by the end of the week.
I don't know. I was talking to Mike last week. He's like, hey, I'm thinking about doing a podcast with this neighborhood. And I was like, you're out of control. Yeah,
I just actually bought another.
But Mike loves to do it. And he's a doer, yeah. And that's what a lot of the Woods and Water guys are. They're a bunch of doers, and when you get a bunch of doers together, you're going to have a wild time.
You know what? You talked about that pack trip. Mm-hmm. Jalindo Taberti, I've known him a long, long time. It was 13 miles on horseback going up, but with the pandemic going on and the heat down in Vegas, and it was hot up there. We just wanted to get out of town. We got up to 9,500 feet. We got off the horses. We tied them up and took the saddles off and stuff. And there's a half a day of fishing in front of us. Jalindo and I sat around the campfire. And I go, so Jalindo, did you come to solve the problems of the world too? He goes, yeah, let's get started. And I'll tell you what, that guy is a wealth of knowledge.
Oh, I have no doubt.
And he's been on the wildlife board. He's been so we had the ebb and flow go, and I go, okay, well, here's what I think the issue is. And Jalindo kind of, you know, he goes, well, you know, back in the day, this is what happened. You talk about a historian. He can, you know, he's been on so many Guzzler projects himself. That is the beauty of the club. I mean, he owns his own fence company. I mean, Taberti, that just is very well known in the town.
Yeah, he's a major contractor around the Vegas area.
But to sit in an easy chair next to him at a fire at 9,500 feet and discuss the problems of the world, if it wasn't for Woods and Waters, that conversation wouldn't have taken place.
Well, I think you've got a unique club, so everybody in the club, for the most part, is pretty driven. I remember the first meeting I ever came to. I actually... Ron suckered me into it.
Do the presentation.
Ron's like, hey, I'm supposed to do a presentation. I'm in Phoenix. So here's the stuff. Go do it for me. Yeah. And we were doing a presentation on, I think we were doing duck banding at the time.
Yeah, the rocket netting.
So I get a presentation in front of like a bunch of guys that I don't even know. Right. And the first time at Mike, I'm like, hey, I'm doing your presentation. And so we go through that whole thing and somebody came up to me after the meeting and some of the clubs in town, it's ebb and flow, right? And so sometimes projects don't get done as efficiently as they probably should. And our club had been in a lull at one point, and Ron and I came in, and we just took the bull by the horns. We're like, we got to get stuff done. And we started doing projects. And the attitude I have is you guys don't do anything. Right. And then 6 months later, I go back to another meeting, and it's like, we can tell you guys are in the club now because things are getting done. And this Woods and Waters group, it does. It's a group of doers. And what you have with a group of doers, whether it's their sportsmen or whatever they are, they're going to be successful. So there are some successful people in that club and there's successful people around that club. And it's not because they're in the club. They're in the club because they're successful because they're doers.
Yeah.
And so for Ron and I are, we're go-getters. I mean, we're not going to sit around and let somebody else do it for us. We're going to go take the bull by the horns and get things done. And so for us, I think that's why we fit so well in that club.
Yeah.
Because we're all like-minded. If Ron and I say, hey, Mike, we're going to help you with a podcast. We're going to come help you with a podcast. We're not going to say, hey, we're going to help you with a podcast. Yeah, call me in 6 or 8 years.
Yeah.
You know, but it's, and we see a lot of that out there. If there's a honcho on an event, you better bet that event's going to go on.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing we have like this last fishing event got postponed a week. And it was because of the weather and it was a safety thing. And some of the guys, we want to give as many opportunities to guys that want to fish to go fish. Well, right. There were a lot of guys that said, it's too windy, I'm not coming.
It was snowing up there.
That's good. We would have.
Hey, my son on the Rubies, didn't you pull somebody up there on oxygen on a horse?
So, not on oxygen, but they pack it. And once he got up there, he's 81 years old. I mean, he sucked down some oxygen.
That's what because I'm telling you. You guys are wild.
It's but again, it's a bucket list for some guys. Now, it wasn't out. No.
You won't get me on a horse.
Yeah. He'll take the oxygen, just not the horse.
That same guy went on the pheasant hunt trip that Brian was talking about. At 80 years old, shot his first ever pheasant on that trip. I didn't know he'd never harvested a pheasant in his life. He had the most fun. But he's got bad knees. Neil Dilley had bad knees. We put the two of them together. And between the two of those guys, they still came back with like 20 pheasants.
Well, that's because between the two of them, they had a good set of knees.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was fun. I mean, Al came on up. It was one of those that we just want to go do every year.
It's just a great, I mean, all the events, I don't think I've done anything with that club that I haven't thoroughly enjoyed. I mean, even you go sit down and play poker in a hotel lobby, for goodness sakes. I mean, the ice fishing trip, it was 19 degrees below zero when we stepped out on the ice.
Yeah.
We had an absolute blast. And, yeah. And you know, it's Ron, I've never ice fished before. So you're learning new ways to do the same things you love to do a lot of times.
Yeah.
And when it comes to shooting, I've had coaching shooting. I've had guys, we did an event on an Indian reservation and these kids were just, their style was awful. I mean, it was miserable. They were out of balance. I mean, there was no way they should have been hitting clays. And they were 50 for 50 on clays. And somebody goes, aren't you going to adjust their stance? I'm like, nope. You call me when they start missing and I'll go help them. But yeah. Until then, you let them shoot how they're going to shoot. But there's so many different ways to do things that you can find something that's going to accent your way of doing things. Ron and I fish together. We don't fish necessarily the same way. But I learned a lot off of Ron. We have different ways we like to do things.
I catch a lot. Brian fishes a lot.
Yeah,
that's right. There's that old sticker with the game, the thing with the game warden, the cartoon, and it's that game warden comes to the guy. He's like, "Hey, where's your fishing license?" He goes, "I don't have one." He goes, "Well, I have to write you a ticket for fishing without a license." He goes, "You know, I ain't fishing because I never catch a damn thing."
Yeah.
So, but you know, and that's the thing is I might learn from Al something that I've never seen before, or we might go on a fishing trip and learn a completely new way to cook a trout.
Oh yeah.
You know, and that's the thing is with people, it's how much knowledge can you get, right?
Yeah.
And too much in the world now, it's like, how much can they give me? Well, all you need is their knowledge. If you got a little bit of their knowledge and took time to get a little bit of their knowledge, the rest will come.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Al being my neighbor, I took him out one day. He wanted a lesson in shooting sporting clays. Well, I knew that his occupation was a pilot. So we go out to the station, and before we go out, I got talking to him. I said, so Al, what exactly is crabbing? Oh, when you got that wind coming in like this, you got to turn that aircraft like this. And I'm like, okay, so you make an adjustment, right? He goes, yeah, and then at the last minute, you turn it straight and you set her down. I go, okay, well, this target's coming into the side. You got to overshoot the runway a little bit and bring it on back. So he shot phenomenal. But, his face just lit up because he started hitting targets. It's like, well, this is just easy. They're right in front of me. I said, yeah, it's just like, you know, it's like you back at the controls with the sticks and going, oh, I don't need to read the manual on how to do this. I can, you know, it's going back to the basics. But there's so much knowledge out there that I'd say, okay, so Al, what do you do if you overshoot the runway? How do you know when you've got, oh, pull it on up? the stories that these guys tell is unbelievable.
Yeah, and it's
there's a world of knowledge in the group.
And everybody has a different occupation. They all do something different. And I think it's funny because you talk about how you get a different shooter to shoot a little bit different, a little bit better. So I was doing a 4-H when I was doing my 4-H certification. So you shoot, I think in one day, I think I shot 500 clays in one day.
Okay.
And it was ridiculous. I mean, we were just shooting all day. And I was having issues. I mean, I couldn't hit the broadside of a barn from the inside with both doors closed. So all of a sudden, one of the sections we do is we talk about eye dominance because that's a big thing.
Yes.
Well, I'm cross-eye dominant.
Okay.
I still shoot right-handed. I have to close my eye.
Okay.
That's just the way it is.
So you're left-eye dominant.
So I'm left-eye dominant. Okay. I've always had to do that. That's the way it's always been. I shoot instinctively on handgun. I shoot instinctively on shotgun most of the time just because that's the way I always had to learn. And I'm just having a tough time. And so one of the things was they wanted you to know what it felt like to switch hands.
Yeah.
So a kid that's now cross-eyed dominant, you want them to shoot with their dominant, on their dominant
shoot
side,
left-handed,
right?
Left-handed when they're normally a right-handed.
So like my kid, he always shot right-handed. He goes to his first 4-H shoot, and they're like, hey, switch hands. And after that, he went 0 for 6. He went 6 for 6 the next 6.
Yeah.
Just switching. So for me, I went to an unnatural side. I've never shot left-handed in my entire life. And I shot the next 5 clays. Because it forced you to go back to the basics, too.
Yes.
So it forces you to go back and redo everything. And I know when I'm missing my clays, I know what I'm doing as I got to pause in because I've been a rifle shooter for so long. You get a good sight picture, you stop. Well, I know that's what I'm doing when I'm missing clays.
Yeah.
You know, 9 times out of 10, I'm behind the clay. You know.
I want to ask Mike a question, see if he could help solve that conundrum that we had at Paranagat this year. When we were in the wind, the wind was coming at our face. Was it coming at our face? Yeah, wind was coming at our face, and we missed like 15 ducks in a row.
Oh.
15. Now, are they going away from you?
No, they were right down to our decoys. That was the closest we'd had them all year, I think.
Yeah, they're landing in our face. They're landing in our face, and we pull up, and we're like, boom, miss. And they get out further, we go, boom, and they fall.
And in our defense, we both had brand new chokes in our guns. And we didn't pattern them either, so we're like, eh.
Okay, so two things. Number one, almost every shot wing shooting requires a lead. Some are small, some are big. You cannot shoot a lead if you're not looking in front of the target. Instinctively human, we say the target is that duck. I want to look at that duck. And when you look at that duck, the gun goes to that duck. When in rally, you should be saying, these ducks are moving pretty good. I need to be looking 2 feet in front of that duck. You can't look at the duck and then think the gun's going to automatically go 2 feet in front. Have to look at the lead.
We've shot hundreds of ducks. And it was just that day with that wind speed. And I was out with Scotty Fowler, and it was the same thing. It was a high wind, just a whipping wind. And these ducks, it was like someone took a string and tied it on it and set it right there for you. And we're like, okay, here we go. And they just fly away.
I know what was wrong.
I don't know, man.
Peppermint schnapps.
Yeah.
If you can get Ron Drick and peppermint schnapps, we're going to have a game.
There's more issues than that.
A lot of people lose, I'm not going to say lose the depth perception, but they think it's a 20-yard shot when it's really a 30 or a 40.
Maybe.
And when you look at it and you say, okay, when they're right at you, you think they're right at you. But if you had a guy to the far right or the far left, he goes, dude, those things were 35 yards away. No, they're not. They were right there in front of us because it looks visually to you, they're right there. So therefore, your lead triples from 20 yards to 40 yards. In other words, if you have a 2-foot lead at 20 yards, you would think mathematically at 40 yards, it's got to be a 4-foot. No, it's 6-foot when it's that farther out. So that's why when you say chokes are based on yardage.
Yeah.
So it could have been mischoked. But if they're really as close as you think they are, I would question, were they really a 20-yard shot versus...
No, they were in. I mean, they were in.
I wish I could go back in time and drag Mike out there with me and be like, let's sit out here, Mike, come on.
I think part of it is you're so used to, especially you get out to where you're shooting somewhere like Overton or something, and you get used to having to take shots that you're really not taking. And then when that one... It's just kind of like that 2-foot putt, right?
Yeah.
You miss a 2-foot putt, not because you can't make a 2-foot putt, because you've... don't shoot 2 foot putts. And it was,
that one's good. Let's pick it up. Let's go.
Yeah. But it's kind of funny because you get those that should be your easiest shot sometimes. And what I did is I switched my ammo up, not this season because I couldn't find it because Remington went out of business. But before that, I was shooting the hypersonic and it's 1750 foot per second.
Okay.
And it took my lead down to almost zero.
Okay.
And it's just because that's getting so fast. But the reason that 20 to 40 yard difference is so big is you're fighting two things. You're fighting speed getting to it, so it takes longer to get to that extra distance. But you're also fighting an additional coefficient of drag, right? So the faster that round goes, the more drag it is, the slower that shot's going to be at 40
at
yards.
That's true.
So you're going to have – it's going to go a little bit slower at 40 yards. It goes at 20 yards, so you're exacerbating the problem. And that's one of the funnest things Ron and I do is, you know, pass shooting buffles.
Have you ever passed shot a buffalo? Hey,
you're like 30 yards.
You need to go
out
to the skeet field first and practice on that. And then, yeah, ruddy ducks, buffalo heads. Well, those things are fast and they would dive and dart.
You have to, you lead them. Like, so if the buffalo, you see it here, you're going to shoot like over here. And it's like almost like chest passing a basketball at a bird.
Yeah.
You're basically running the shot into the bird.
But you were saying they were right there. I would say you're aiming the gun. You don't ever aim a shotgun. You pull it up and shoot.
Yeah, I don't.
Maybe I was taking too long on it.
I shoot instinctive, so I don't aim anything.
Your point.
Yeah, and that's that's the way I've had to adapt because of the cross-eyed dominance, right? So a handgun, you can't line up a proper shot on a handgun if you're cross-eyed dominant unless you close an eye. No. Now you get into something, you don't have time to close an eye.
Do you see double two sights?
I will, yeah.
That's common with most people.
And so for me, I just learned to shoot instinctive. So wherever that gun's going, that's where my round's going, and that's the way I taught myself to shoot. And so you can be just as accurate with practice. Mm-hmm. It's not the easiest thing to practice, but that is part of the problem. I think I notice if I'd be with my kids shooting, we shoot three disciplines. We do archery, rifle, and shotgun.
Okay.
If I do shotgun or rifle before I do shotgun, I will miss every single bird the rest of the day, guaranteed. And I know what I'm doing because I'm putting that pause in it from being stable on the rifle.
I thought you were shooting a rifle at a duck. I missed them too.
So you guys are dog guys. The best way to learn a lead and to actually see a lead is to take a garden hose, put the dog in the backyard, let it run across, and take that garden hose and try to get him wet. You'll be amazed at how far you got to put that garden hose in front of that dog because by the time it reaches there, if you're moving it like this, it's got a curve to it.
Ron does a similar game. He tries to pee on the dog.
I've got five kids, and he's what I'll do. I'll be like, start running.
But that's the best way to teach a kid what a lead is.
And
because the eye says, you told me to shoot at this. I aimed at that. Yeah, but you got to give it the lead.
And that's a hard concept for kids to get around. Yeah. But then I went out when we were doing the reservation shoot, one of my buddy's brothers comes out and he's, you know, they're Native American and he was snap shooting clays. I mean, I'm talking zero lead, just snap shooting him. And he went 20 for 20.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, man, but it's kind of one of those things. He was instinctively shooting. It's the way he shot all his life. That worked for him. These kids, part of the problem, and duck hunters, we run the same thing with new hunters. They're notoriously slow getting on birds. So not only are they not leading them enough, but they're behind them before they even started because they're having a trouble getting the gun up. And then they'll cheat the gun into the stand. They'll try to cheat the gun. I'm sure you see the same thing on skeet. Mm-hmm. You know, especially my kids, I'm like, I want that gun up and ready. I don't want the gun down. I want it up and ready because that skeet's going to come out and you're going to be behind it already.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, you know, our better shooters, I mean, they get into bad habits, so they have a hard time leading. They'll shoot them right off the top of the trap house. You know, and that's it's a tough thing. I mean, as soon as it's gone from that trap house, they're done. They can't hit a clay.
Yeah. We call it shooting the streak. You see that streak come on out and you jump at it. Most of the time when you're jumping at it, the gun is still moving in the direction of the target. Because they had to move it there to get it there. They didn't get it there, put the brakes on and stop. They just, it went like that, and you just get that little tiny move. So the rule of thumb is the gun must be moving in the direction of the target. So if the target's still coming on up, and you say you're snapping it, you're going at it, and you're seeing it, you're still pushing the gun up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that does help quite a bit. Sounds like we need to have a day out at the range.
Oh, I haven't shot skeeting forever now. Since my kids, since COVID, my kids couldn't shoot. So I'm like, Ron and I would go shoot cleanup for them.
I know. That was awesome.
You guys missed. We'll shoot cleanup.
Oh, hey, Elk and Nelson put on here. They have a left-handed guns. I don't know. You'll have to look at it. It's a pretty interesting article she put up here for you.
Oh, they do have left-handed guns. They're just...
The actions are left-handed.
It's cripple stock is what it's called. But and also... Well,
they're an offset stock. So the stock comes actually across your body into the right position. And they're just they're custom-made stock. But
and then also her photography thing is a triple mark photography.
Triple mark photography.
Yeah. Makes sense.
She does do awesome work.
Yeah.
Super nice girl,
too. We're looking for a club photographer.
Yeah.
There you go, Elkie. You look like you.
I don't know if she can make
up.
Me look good, but we'll see what she can do.
She make your dog look good at least. So
my dog always looks good.
Yeah.
Anyways, well, I think we're getting past my bedtime, Brian.
Yeah, I know. Al's gonna kick us out. So get the heck out, or I'm gonna whoop on you.
Let me do a plug.
Okay.
Our next event is our luncheon, which is this Thursday, 11:30. Actually, 11:15 to 1. We actually start our program at 11:45, but the lunch is served about 11:20, 11:30. Okay. Our guest speaker is Mark Hutchison. Okay. We do $300 worth of door prizes. Doesn't cost you anything for the raffle ticket. That's included with your meal. Okay. And then our next event is the Saturday for the Cummins Lake fishing. And then we move into April. We're into April. Our next one after that, April 17th at Clark County Shooting Park, is our Spring Feast, where we'll do the crawdads, the mud bugs, and all that stuff, and we'll do 100 targets in sporting clays. Sign up for that is at 8:30 in the morning.
Man,
the food
is
free.
I've heard that is the like most people's favorite event of the year is a Spring Feast.
It is.
Yes.
It is.
Yeah.
It's because we all like to eat.
Yeah.
I do too. You didn't say, it was. Where the luncheon.
Oh, the lunches is at Las Vegas National Golf Course. We use their banquet room in the back. The address is 1911. Who can forget that number? Okay. For a hunting club. It's 1911 East Desert End Road. It's between Maryland Parkway and Eastern on the south side of Desert End.
And it's in the back room. It's if you walk through kind of past the pro shop, it's right off to your left.
You need to have a mask on as you're going into the clubhouse. We don't want the businesses to get fined or anything. But because you are eating, it's just like every other restaurant. Once you get in, you can take your mask off and start eating your food. All the food is served banquet style.
Perfect. Yeah.
Buffet style. It
should, the kid has something.
Buffet.
Growing up, I used to use crawdads for fish bait.
Yeah.
Now I eat them.
Yeah, exactly. We all eat them because they're good and they're nice and tasty.
Yes.
A little Cajun style. All right, well. You know, we appreciate you guys coming in and sitting in with us and talking to us. We really
this is enjoyable.
Yeah, we enjoy you guys for sure. I mean, we enjoy having great guys in on the podcast with us and just hanging around with great guys like you. You know, Ron and I probably ought to plug, you know, we're going to be at the 4-H Festival and FFA Festival in Loganville this weekend, which is kind of taking the place of the Clark County Fair this year. We'll have our booth and we'll be recruiting for mentors for the Win U Sportsman's program. So if anybody's
awesome.
Not going on the other stuff. If they want to come by and see us for 10 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, there's a rodeo going on each night at 6 o'clock. There is dancing and music afterwards and everything's free to get into. So, come out and support some of those clubs, man. It's great to have good mentors like you guys in the program. And as always, if you're going to go out this weekend, make sure you take somebody with you. If you're going to take somebody with you, make sure you try to teach them something. And if you can't take somebody or teach somebody, make sure you hunt hard.